We're going to be talking about, they're pretty simple differential equations, like the one we had over there, the harmonic oscillator equation. Could write that up here again. Second derivative of x with respect to t plus omega 0 squared x equals u. And this is x of t, and x of t, and this is u of t. So this omega 0 squared is a constant, and the constant in front of the second derivative. Those are the kind of things we deal with. They come often from Newton's laws and things like that. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be moving from, this is what's really there, but we want to deal with this in the digital world. And so we're going to be sampling like we did in signals and systems. That means we're going to be taking and looking at every capital T seconds. What we'd like to do is we'd like to compare the ways we solve the differential equations here to the ways, how we're going to solve this new system of differential equations, which is now going to be discretized, right? So that's what we're kind of doing. And of course, our goal for all this, stuff we're doing with the Z transforms and so on, is to be able to do those same kind of things we did in feedback and control with Laplace transforms and, system functions, transfer functions, those kind of things. We want to now do those in the discrete world, okay? And so this is going to give us the mechanism, the tools to do that. So that's what we're trying to do. And so first of all, in order to kind of get used to this, just like you did back in circuits and LNA, you started out with a differential equation that came from a circuit or something, and then you solved that equation, right? So what I'd like to do is kind of do both in the continuous time and in the discrete time, do the same differential equation, and we'll just kind of see how it relates, okay? So that's what I want to kind of do for my example today. So, to start out with, if we were going to solve this thing, we would guess. What would you guess? Guess a solution. That's the standard way. What would you guess? X of t is what?
E to the
st, right? Isn't that what, that's what you'd guess, right? I mean, and we plug that in. I mean, I'm gonna kind of, and then this is actually the homogeneous part of the solution, right? Or not the natural part of the thing, right? This is x natural, and then there's an x forced would look like this u of t and all its derivatives, some linear combination, x forced would of t would be equal to. A1 times u of t plus, make it a0 u of t here, plus a1 u prime of t plus, kind of thing. That's kind of what you guess for the force solution until it wraps around or something happens, right? And you plug that in and you get the force solution. That's, the part that comes from the u of t, and the natural part would be, if u of t was 0, you'd still have that kind of a solution, right? You kind of remember that. Does that make sense? Okay. And there would also be, in this differential equation, there would be the s we'd have to get, right, which would come in the characteristic equation. Remember when you did that, you would plug that back in here. And so you'd say, the second derivative of x natural of t with respect to t plus omega 0 squared x natural of t equals 0, and we would plug in x natural there. And so that would give us something like this. You would get a times e to the st times s squared from two derivatives of this guy, right, from the second derivative. And then you've got plus omega 0 omega 0 squared times a e to the st equals 0, and then you could divide off the a e to the st, and you ended up with a characteristic equation. This was the characteristic equation. You remember that, right? And in this case, you'd get S equals plus or minus J omega, 0, right? So we end up with S equals plus or minus J omega, 0. And we could also solve this with a Laplace transform. And of course, you could plug in the forced response. If I picked a U of T, we could do that too. But I'm just kind of trying to remind you, this is all kind of old stuff here, right? Does this make sense? I mean, is everybody comfortable with this kind of thing that we've done before? There's one other thing I probably should mention here. We got the S's from the characteristic equation, but where do we get the A from? And how many A's are there? I mean, now there's two solutions because I got plus and minus this thing right here, right? So really we got X natural of T equals A1 e to the plus J omega 0 T, right? Plus A2 e to the minus J omega 0 T, right? Because you got to take a linear combination of all the solutions to get the solution because it's a linear system, right? Now there's two A's, A1 and A2. How do we get those?
You have to have initial...
initial conditions. So A1 and A2 come from x of 0, right? X of 0 and dx dt at time t equals 0, right? And you would actually apply those after you'd already figured out what the forced response was. And of course, the total response is x of t equals x natural of t plus x forced of t, right? You'd add the forced response on there, and then you'd apply the initial conditions in order to figure out the two A's, okay? And why are there two this time instead of one or six or some other number? How do you tell if you just looked at this differential equation? How would you tell there were going to be two initial conditions? Second order, and each derivative gives you another initial condition, right? I mean, if you have a first order differential equation, say dx dt equals 3x or something, you're only one derivative, so there's only one constant of integration, right? And that constant of integration is essentially this thing that's needed to be nailed down by the initial condition, right? In other words, if you knew the slope was this, but you also got to know, a little bit more than what the slope is, you've also got to know what one point on there to peg that thing, right? Does that make sense? Okay, so this is old stuff. Right? I just kind of want to remind you of old stuff because we need to do the new stuff, which is going to be directly analogous to this old stuff, and it's going to relate to the old stuff, and you need to understand how it all ties together. Does that make sense? That's what we want to do. Okay, so are there any questions on the old stuff before we go to the new stuff? Okay, well, if you have questions, we can come back and look at this, in a little bit here. But now what happens when we discretize things? So, what happens now we're going to have only x of kt for every, capital T seconds. So that means we're going to basically have an A to D converter in our system, and it's going to grab the x at 0, and then at capital T seconds, and then at 2 capital T seconds, and at 3 and 4, and so on, right? So that's what we're going to do. So now we need to figure out, how does this whole thing here, apply to that? And we kind of started on that a little bit last day, right? So let's just go kind of remind ourselves what we did last day. So we started with the same differential equation here. And what we said was we were just going to use a forward difference approximation for the derivative. In other words, the derivative dx dt is like delta x over delta t, right? Which is, you know, x at capital T minus x at 0 over capital T if you wanted the derivative at 0. Or in our case, we did somewhere here, I don't know, I guess we worked it out over here on the second page here. We just basically said something like this. We said dx dt is x at k plus 1t minus x at kt over t, right? That just makes sense, right? It's a delta x over delta t. And then we needed a second derivative. So we took this thing right here, and we used recursively used this definition in order to get the second derivative. So I took this thing and evaluated it one step ahead, which would be k plus 2t minus k plus 1t over. So this is the derivative, you know, for that thing. And then I subtracted that thing right here, and I divided that by t, and then I simplified down, and I end up with this mess down here, okay? Okay? So that's the second derivative. And then we take this thing right here, we use that second derivative, and we plug it into our equation, and I don't know, did we actually do that? I don't know whether we did that over here. Maybe we did. Yeah, I did right here. Okay, so then we plugged it in down here, and now we've got our difference equation, which should be analogous to our differential equation right there. Is that okay? Cool. So, since we've played with differential equations before, we should play with this guy a little bit just to try it, okay? So, it's kind of like what we did back here. Well, we had a situation where if there was a forcing function, then we had to do the forced response, right? And if there wasn't a forcing function, then we got this natural response. Let's just play with it. First of all, let's assume there's no forcing function, and we'll see if we can figure out how to solve this differential equation, I mean this difference equation, in the same way we solved out this differential equation if it was just a simple one with no forcing function. Is that all right? So we'll just do that. So, if u of t equals 0, this is no forcing function, well, we have this thing down here. We've got, I'm just going to write x, and I'm going to simplify. I'm just going to write k plus 2. That really means x of k plus 2 capital T. Is that all right? Or maybe I could write this as x sub k plus 2. I mean, they do that in the book, right? X sub k plus 2, that's the first term there, minus 2 x sub k plus 1, and then plus x of k, right? And then, and that's all over t squared, right? And then I've got plus omega 0 squared, and then I just got x sub k equals 0 in this case, because I said u sub k was 0. Is that all right? So this is kind of new notation here, right? This is a difference equation, but it corresponds to this differential equation back here, right? And so now we have to guess what to guess, right? Does that make sense? So let's guess what to guess. So I'm going to guess, well, I'm going to use my previous guess. Guess x of kt, that would be x of t evaluated at kt, right? If I put in kt, you know, this is a natural response here, right? So I'm just going to do this. I'm going to put a e to the s kt. Is that right? So I'm going to say a e to the s kt. Seems reasonable. So I should be able to plug that back in. But I can already see that my pen is going to be using more ink than I'd like. Because this is really could be written more simply like this. It could be, I'll make it still an A, say the A there, but the E to the ST could be called Z. So if I go Z to the K. So Z is just defined as E to the ST. Now, is that right? Did I do that okay? Yeah, good thinking. So I may make a mistake here. But this Z, let's think about, what is this Z? Just let's think about the Z just a second here. Do you remember back in Laplace transforms? If I took a function of S, if I took F of S, and I multiplied by e to the st, or maybe e to the minus st. Do you remember what that did for me? What was that? Do you remember that was a special operator, a special thing in Laplace transforms that did something? Don't remember, huh? So you guys, this is the difference between, you see, your generation and my generation. My generation, it was so important to learn everything by heart, you know. And your generation, oh, we just look it up. So I guess you could look it up on Wikipedia, right? Or just ask me, right?
I did learn it by heart. It's just not accessible right now.
Yeah, I know. Your heart disappeared. Okay, so let's just remind ourselves here. You see, there's something about this whole thing that we've got going on here. This x of k plus 1, or 2, is really x of k delayed by 2 time samples, right? Isn't that what it is? And this x of k plus 1 is x delayed by 1 time sample, right? So let's just look at the Laplace transform of, say, f of t minus a u of t minus a. T minus a was the integral from 0 minus to infinity of f of t minus a u of t minus a. U of t is the unit step function I'm talking about here, not necessarily an input like I was using over there. Maybe I should have. And then I've got e to the minus st, and then I've got dt, right? That's the Laplace transform definition, isn't it? Okay, and so if I let the thing it's just begging to happen is let t minus a be, say, x or something. X equal t minus a. I don't know if I should x or v or something. Maybe I should use, I'll call it t0. T0 is t minus a, okay? So this then, using a substitution of variables, will be the integral f of t0, u of t0, e to the minus s. Well, let's see. T is equal to, this implies t equals t0 plus a, right? So I got e to the minus s, t0 plus a, right? And then dt equals dt0, so I got a dt0 right here, right? And then when I would plug in here, if I plugged in t is 0, if t is 0, t0 is minus a, right? So this would be minus a. And then when I plug in infinity, if t0 is, t is infinity, t0 is certainly infinity, right? And now this u of t0 is actually a unit step function that doesn't turn on until time t equals 0, right? So this could be written as the integral from 0 minus to infinity of f of t0, u of t0, still without changing anything, e to the minus s, st0, And I could factor out an e to the minus s a, right? Like that, e to the minus s a, pull him outside because he doesn't have any t zeros in him. And then I can say dt zero, and then I can recognize this guy as my old friend. And what is he? Oh dear, man, this isn't signals and systems, this is LNA. Right, well, what is that? That is the definition of something. Just the definitions are things you have to memorize, you can't really derive them very well. That's the definition of what?
Convolution.
Well, no, not convolution. No, it's not the fast way a transform, no. Well, I mean, what were we doing here? This thing was the Laplace transform of this thing right here. This is the definition of the Laplace transform right here of f of t minus a, u of t minus a, right? I mean, are you just taking, I could have written anything on here, blah, 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 and you would have said, yeah, that's fine, whatever he says, right? Is that what's, I mean, how did I get this? I mean, does that ring a bell at all? Right, okay, and what is this?
Oh, that's the function, that's the Laplace
again. Oh, yeah, of course! Oh, man, equals e to the minus s a times f of s, right?
Oh,
so in other words, multiplying by e to the minus s a in the Laplace domain is the same thing as delaying by a seconds, right? In other words, it's a procrastination operator, right? Yeah, I know a lot of you guys like to use that operator. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Oh man, stop me. I mean, you guys should have stopped me up here. What in the world are you doing right here, right? If you can't recognize this guy, then what was I doing up there?
I was expecting to be something different.
I don't know. I mean, I need your help. You got to tell me when you're not getting it, because, you know, the problem is, I've done this thing 100 times and it seems so simple and easy to me. And if it's not seem simple and easy to you, you got to stop me. But does this make sense now?
Yeah.
And you remember doing this Laplace transform thing? When you saw something like this and you had inverse transform this, you said, okay, look, I'm going to cover this up and I'm going to inverse transform this and then I'm just going to shift it over by a seconds, right? Isn't that what you did? And this is a very important thing because, you see, back here, we're shifting things by cap t seconds every so often, right? And this guy right here is really equal to, or this implies that z to the minus 1 is equal to e to the minus st, which is a delay of t seconds, right? Every time I multiply by z, it's a z to the minus 1, it's a delay of t seconds. Every time I multiply by z, it's an advance of t seconds, right? And the opposite of procrastination, this is even better, right? I mean, I like that, right? Let's do this thing, get it done ahead of time, right? Does that make sense? Okay? So this z thing that I'm doing here is really an advance operator, and z to the minus 1 is a delay operator. Okay? And this z is easier to write than e to the s cap t. But it is e to the s cap t. Okay? Make sense? Okay, cool. Okay. So now let's just go and let's try this thing. I mean, we don't know where this is going to work. I mean, that e to the s t worked over here, and maybe e to the s k t will work here. Let's just try it, right? And I'm just going to use z to the k because it's faster to write. Okay? So, put that in there, and now we're going to do this. Okay. So, I'm going to assume this guy right here is really x sub k. I mean, I wrote x of kt, but we're writing x of k.
Right here, right?
Okay, so let's just substitute in. That's what we did with e to the st when we did this thing over here, right? We just plugged that e to the st in right there, and we got this, and it just kind of worked itself out. So let's do the same thing here. Let's plug in a times z to the k wherever we see an x of k, right? So I'm going to have a times z. And what do I put z to the what for this k plus 2 term, x of k plus 2? It's k is going to be k plus 2, right? It seems like it, right? So a times z, oh no, z, not z to the z to the k plus 2, right? This right here is x sub k plus 2, right? I mean, if x sub k is z to the k, then x sub k plus 2 is z to the k plus 2, right? And I get an a in front there. So, okay, so now I've got minus 2 x, no, I don't want to put x, I want to put a, z, to the, this would be k plus 1, right? And then plus x of k, which was a z to the k. And all that's divided by t, right? Plus omega 0 squared a z to the k equals 0. Is that right? T squared, thank you. Yes, t squared. Any other mess ups here? Okay, so it looks like we could divide the a's out, right? And we could even divide out the z to the k, couldn't we? Kind of like we divided out an e to the st over here, right? And everywhere a z to the k divides out. So I end up with z to the 2 minus 2 z to the 1 plus 1 plus omega 0 squared t squared. I'm multiplying everything through by t squared 2. Equals, is that 0? Did I do that right? Just double check me here. I don't want to mess up. Okay, I divided out all the a's, all the z to the k's, and multiplied by t squared. Okay, so this thing right here, over here when we did this thing, we got the characteristic equation, right? So over here we have the characteristic equation, I guess, right? Same thing, right? So I solved this using a quadratic, kind of like I solved that using a quadratic, right? Make sense?
Yeah.
So I guess I better do that because I'd like to know what the roots are here because this is kind of interesting. So z equals, so it'll be minus b, which is 2, plus or minus the square root of b squared, which is 4, minus 4ac, minus 4 times 1 plus omega 0 squared t squared, right? All over 2a, which is 2, right? Which I could simplify this down, and this would be 1 plus or minus, and this 2 would cancel, so this would be the square root of that one and that one go away, don't they? Square root of minus, or just going to be j. It's going to be j what? J. Is it j omega 0 t? Did I do it? See, the 4 and the 4 subtracted, right? And then this 4, which was in front of there, canceled out with a 2 here. Okay. And then I cut the square root of this minus omega 0 squared t squared, and the square root of minus 1 gave me the j. The plus or minus was the plus or minus, and the square root of omega right. 0 squared t squared just gave me omega 0 t. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what z, those are the two roots. Now we got two roots this time, just like before. Man, I knew I was going to run into problems with this thing here. I don't know, somebody else has a different style of teaching than I do, I guess. So now we need to have two solutions. We have x, where x is our thing, right? So we're saying x of k equals a times z to the 1 plus j omega 0 cap t, right? Is that right? That's A1 plus A2 times Z to the 1 minus J omega 0 cap T. Right? Is that okay?
Yeah.
That's okay. And now we got these two A's. Man alive, what do we do with those two A's? How do we get those two A's? From the initial conditions. Oh, initial conditions. Interesting. So the initial conditions, if we think back to our differential equation, our two initial conditions were x of 0 equals something and dx dt equals something, right? And if we think back to what we were doing over here when we did our difference approximation thing, whatever that was, it was kind of like back here. I just hit the wrong button. The wrong one again. I want this one. Okay, our difference was this. So we know what x of 0 is, right? So given x of t equals 0, which is x sub 0 equals something, right? I don't know, maybe I'll call it x sub 0 or something, right? Okay, that's the initial condition for x, right? And dx dt at t equals 0 equals some x prime of 0, right? Which in our case equals x sub k plus 1 of 0 plus 1, right? Minus x sub 0 over cap t, right? Using this thing right here. Did I do that right? Yeah, right. So this really tells me, I already know what x of 0 is, right? So essentially, this is the same, we know x sub 0 and x sub 1, right? In other words, there are two initial conditions this time, only they come, if you want to think of it, and they come from the derivatives, but, and the initial function, in real life, but in a mathematical sense, the mathematicians would say, well, we just know two points on this discrete, these two numbers, right? And actually, if you think about it, we could, given these two numbers, x of 0 and x of 1, we could use what we call recursion back here and plug in k equals 0 here. I know what that number is, right? I know what that number is, right? That would be x of 1. I know what that number is, right? And I could solve for this, x of 2. Oh, now we got three of them, right? And then I could make k equal 1, and I get the next one, right? And I just keep going like this forever, right? Well, that's kind of like, it's kind of like thinking of a differential equation. Well, here I am. I know the slope is this. The slope relates to the function in this way. And I know what this point is right here, so I can advance a little bit, it's the same kind of thing, right? But we probably wouldn't want to do that in differential equations, but we could, And here we certainly can, and the computer's very good at this kind of thing, right? Does that make sense? Now, I'd like to think for just a second about another thing that we had back here in the continuous domain that was very important to us in feedback and control, And that was this thing of stability. Do you remember that stability? Actually, this differential equation that I picked right here is right smack on the borderline of being unstable, isn't it? I mean, it's an oscillator, isn't it? I mean, this is a harmonic oscillator equation. So that's right smack on the border of being unstable in the continuous domain. Now, this, of course, is an approximation to that thing, so it's not exactly the same as that thing, right? I mean, as t gets really, really small, it's going to end up there, but we're not quite there yet, right? So it would be kind of interesting, I suppose. We could take this differential equation and we could apply recursion and follow it along and see whether it looks like it's going to be stable or not, right? But I think we can also kind of see from our assumed solution when it might be stable and when it might not be stable. Because our assumed solution was A times Z to the K. Right? And Z was the roots of the characteristic equation was this, right? And when we did thought about the stability over here, the thing that made it unstable was the roots of the characteristic equation, if they had a positive real part, we knew it was going to exponentially grow, right? E to the plus number, positive number, is going to, you know, get bigger and bigger, right? That's how we knew it was going to be unstable there. So we ought to be able to kind of use a similar kind of an idea over here to figure out where this might be unstable, which is just as important for us over here in digital control as this stability business was, you know, the right-hand plane business was in analog control, right? Does that make sense? So this is something that's important. This is something we need to think about very carefully because we know where we want the roots of this equation to be if it's going to be a decent system, right? I mean, something we can handle. We don't want to put our poles so that something would happen here and these guys right here, this thing would blow up, this A times Z to the K. So I'm going to stop talking for a minute and let you guys think because I need an answer. I need to know what are the regulations on these roots of this characteristic equation for Z here? What range of the Z plane? Z is a complex number, obviously. You know, 1 plus J omega is 0 T, right? It's a complex number. What part of the Z plane is stable, and what part of the z-plane is unstable? I can tell you over here what part of the s-plane is stable is the left half s-plane, right? Anything with the real part of s less than zero, right? What corresponds over here in the z-plane to that same thing in the s-plane? The right side? And you think it'd be just swapping the left and the right? Oh, yeah, I like Austin's idea. It's a complex number, though. How can you say a complex number is less than 1? Is J less than 1 or what?
The magnitude less.
Okay. I like it. So Austin says, this is Austin's rule here. Austin's rule. Yeah, Austin's rule is the magnitude of the character roots of the characteristic equations, Z sub I or Z sub N or something, must be less than 1. That's what he says. And it makes sense to me because, you see, if the magnitude of Z, of those characteristic roots, you know, these things right here, if those magnitudes right there happen to be bigger than 1, right? I mean, let's see here. How does this work? This guy right here is obviously says it's going to be unstable, right? I mean, and this guy right here, right? I mean, You know, somehow I missed something here. I forgot the K, right? That's what I'm missing, right?
I forgot the K, didn't I?
It's, you know, the Z to the C.
Wait a minute, I didn't do that right at all. Let me try this again.
It's, you guys got to stop me here. This is 1 plus omega 0 T, right, to the K. And this is 1 minus omega 0 T to the K, right? That's the Z, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, if this thing right here is bigger than 1, and you raise it to the K, right, if you raise 2 to the K, it's just getting 2 times 2, keeps getting bigger and bigger every time. K gets bigger, right? What does that mean? It's going to blow up, right? And even if it was minus 2, right, it's still going to go boom, 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 boom. You know, it's going to get bigger and bigger somehow, right? And so Austin's idea that if the magnitude of these roots, which are right there. Yes, I do. Thank you. I can't write. I can't do anything right here. J minus minus J. And let me just, for a second here, maybe say that this is x of k is approximately, I don't know if you guys remember this approximately, this is a1, and yeah, maybe I shouldn't do that right now because, yeah, I don't know, it's tempting here.
I think I'd kind of like to relate it back to this e to the st here. And there's an approximation that e to the x is equal to the limit as well as say n goes to I'm going to say t goes to infinity of 1 plus x over t to the t or something like that. All right. I'm trying to remember my approximations. I think, this is a question mark here because...
It's E.
And then this would be a 1 or something here. Okay, so then E to the X would be equal to the limit as T goes to infinity of 1 plus 1 over T to the XT, right, or something. So I'm wondering if we took the limit as I have to think about that. I think this guy right here is going to, using something like this, I can break that back down to e to the minus st here. Maybe I should get you guys to do that. I'd have to think about this for a minute, but there's something like this that would give me that. I have to think about that approximation, but I think that would come out okay. Because this x of k should be x of kt, right? I mean, that would be approximately x of kt. And as if I let the limit as cap t goes to smaller and smaller, this thing should, in the limit, this is T, maybe I... Yeah. Anyway, it's something like that. I don't know whether maybe. Yeah, I don't remember the definition of E. I'd have to look.
That's right.
You think that's right? Yeah. This is correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the same thing as E, then, would be the limit. Limit, let's do it as this, as N. Let me make this N here, right here, instead of T. I'm going to make this N, N, and N, right? So then this would be the limit as T goes to 0, and T is 1 over N. So 1 plus T to the, is that right? 1 over T, is that right? Did I mess this up when I erased it?
No,
that's okay. So now if we do this e to the kt or something, I could put a k here or something. And I think I could take this guy and make that guy look like an e to the minus j omega t kind of thing or something. So I think with a little work, I could make that work. Well, next day what we're going to do, I think we're kind of out of time here today, but next day what we're going to do is we're going to take and we're going to now look at a thing called the Z transform. We're going to actually take X of T and we're going to discretize it like we did in Signals and Systems by multiplying by that impulse functions, right? Remember that stuff? Yeah, so Austin, this will be new for you, but it's old hat for these guys. And we'll see what happens when we take the Laplace transform of that discretized version of the function.